Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Some people hit rock bottom. Most of us can't even imagine. No home, no safety, no clear way out. The kind of low where you wonder if anyone would ever notice you, that you even disappeared. Today's guest has been there. He served his country, and then he found himself on the streets, in the gutter, as he calls it. But this isn't a story about how far a person can fall. It's a story about how far a person can come back. And if you have ever felt like you were at your lowest of lows, like there was no way up from where you are, this is the conversation you need to hear today. My guest today has a story that will stay with you. Mike Smith is a former homeless veteran who lived through the kind of hardship most people only read about. And he came out the other side with a powerful message of redemption, faith, and hope. He shares his true life journey openly and honestly so that others who are struggling can know that they're not alone and that there is a way back, that it is possible. Mike, welcome to the show. I am so glad to have you.
Well, thank you so much, Stacey, for having me on. I can't wait to actually get into my material and share it with your audience about, like you said, being down at my lowest point for many years. And it did lead to me being a homeless veteran, civil commitments in 2 states. And then everybody gave up on me, Stacey. And when I hit my lowest point, everybody in society, including my wife, said, "You are so far gone. Your only option is we're going to stick you in a state mental institution," after my stay in jails as well. So I was in a state mental hospital out in Jamestown, North Dakota. And just to give you guys a point of reference, that's 100 miles straight west of Fargo. So Fargo's my home. But in the state mental hospital, what was going on was I was so far off my medications that they would take me in shackles. And I get emotional whenever I share this story. But they would take me in shackles every week out of the state mental hospital and transport me in the back of a paddy wagon to stand trial for my freedoms to see if I could be released. And this was after my first homeless shelter stay. So I'm out in Jamestown and I'm being shuttled back and forth. And what would happen was I couldn't even speak when I stood before the judges for 5 different weeks. They said, "No, you know, he's going to be back in the state mental institution until further notice." So I'm out there for the 6th week. And then they brought me back. And this is when I was released. But I didn't get my freedoms back in society. They stuck me in my second homeless shelter. And so I'm in there. And this is kind of leading up to the story of how it got redeemed and God used it for his glory. Being on those lowest streets and in all those dark places, I was in that second homeless shelter where what they would do would have the veterans that were homeless in the upper level of the facility. And then the people that were transitioning out of jail would be in the bottom level of the facility. And so we would eat all of our meals together. So I got to meet a lot of those guys and, you know, obviously the vets that were upstairs as well. So I'm in there one day just staring up at the ceiling tiles. And this lady came in that worked at the homeless shelter and said, "Mike, you know, today we got some mail for you." And I kind of thought to myself, you know, I don't understand why somebody would be mailing me when everybody in society has been given up on me. You know, I didn't have any more friends. Everybody had abandoned me at this point in my life. And that's what you referred to when you said being at the bottom and hitting the gutter. I was there literally for so long in my life that it really struck a chord with so many people that the mail came and there was 2 service military checks in there from back pay for getting 100% disability rating, which translates to $4,000 a month tax-free money, as well as the first payment. So that's really kind of what the start of the shift was, to come back and transition back into society. I did wind up going back after I got the money and bought myself a twin home. My wife and I were still not really on speaking terms. So I bought a twin home. And in there, I got back into using again. So one time, about 6 months into it, I had a really bad fall that almost killed me. It hit my right deltoid on a door jam when I was falling full force into it. And I always point out that the distance between the deltoid and here is a very short distance, so I would not be here today had I fell just in a few inches from there. But so that didn't even stop me. What really stopped my whole thing of living like that was God appeared to me in a dream one night. And this is something that really resonated with me that now is going to be kind of carried out in a new message about the muddy penny. God appears to me in this dream and shares this testimony with me and kind of points his way as to what I'm supposed to do with the rest of my life moving forward, which is this. Everybody in life, you know, Stacy, can relate to this story, because we all have mud and we're a muddy penny in how we look at ourselves in the mirror every day, with our flaws, our hurts, our baggage, our you name it. Ever since the fall of mankind, you know, when you go back to the Garden of Eden, that's talking about shame right away. As soon as, you know, they realized, oh my gosh, they ate from that tree, then all of a sudden they were feeling shame and regret and all these other hurts. So that message is that we all have those hurts and insecurities. It's just a matter of how do you deal with those? You know, we're all addicted to something. So my story goes like this, that after all that happened to me, the whole time, I don't know why, but God was laying on my heart for 30 years, Mike, write about this, write about all the psych stays, write about, you know, all these hurts that you're going through. It's going to be used someday. And I didn't understand it, but I journaled for over 30 years. So after that fall and having my shoulder operated on and seeing the dream come to me about the sea of tears, having to care about everybody that God brings across my path on a one-on-one basis, is really what my life is about these days. It focuses my attention on, if there's somebody that reaches out to me, I make it a personal message and to say to them, I'm going to love on this person beyond belief. And that happened to me in 2024, where I had met this gentleman. By now I'm back reconciled with my wife, and God put this guy in my path at a jail chaplain ministry named Brad Witzke. And Brad comes up to me. I'm standing in line at a popcorn stand at a movie, and he comes up to me, he opens his shirt and says, Mike, look at this big wound I have. This is from having cancer. And I thought to myself, man, this guy's nuts. You know, who would come up to somebody and just, you know, introduce himself that way? But Brad and I became very good friends. And long story short, he died of cancer in 2024. And mm-hmm. I watched him pass away. And I thought to myself, okay, God, what do you want me to do now? I loved on that guy so unconditionally. We went out to eat all the time, you know, just spoiled him rotten. And I was devastated losing him. So anyway, I took all the journaling that I'd done for the last 30 plus years and got my book published out in New York through Brooklyn Publishers. And then after I got that book published, I started researching podcasting. And long story short, I've been featured on some of the biggest podcasts on the planet, including yours. And God just used it for his glory. He said to me, you know, Mike, this is your mission now, to share your story with the world. Tell them about all your hurts. Be honest about it. Share your message of pain and restoration. And your story can resonate and affect so many different people. So I shared the story with Robert this morning that I had a meeting with the corporate top level person at Bell Bank for their Pay It Forward program. And Julie and I are in this meeting, and as it begins, she goes, Mike, how did you get to a meeting with me? I'm the top corporate person in the country that has control over the Pay It Forward program. And I said, well, you know, Stacy, I'm in these small men's groups, and kind of long story short, I told her the story about the parable of the muddy penny. And she goes, Mike, this is amazing. I was upstairs the other day, and they vacuum meticulously every night, but there's this muddy penny on the floor that they didn't get. So I picked it up and saved it, and I didn't understand why till now. And that's kind of my message. The muddy penny represents the entire way that people, I believe, should look at their hurting friends and people that God brings across their path daily, to love on that muddy penny and not judge them.
And now, can you tell us, like, you know, let's start at the beginning, like before the hearts, you know, the hardest chapters, you know, so before the man behind the story, you know, take us back, like, who were you before everything unraveled? You served your country. So tell us about that part of your life, like what, you know, what that road looked like for you and eventually led you to the streets. Like, when did you first feel the things that, you know, when things started to slip for you?
When my dad died at age 15. That was my first suicide attempt. We had been living in Sauk Center, Minnesota until I was 12 years old. He lost his job, and it really was a personal blow to me really heavily, because I look exactly like my dad. I share in my first chapter in my book about being called Little Joe. My dad's name was Joe. So when I lost him at 15, I attempted to kill myself. And later in life, I joined the military after high school because I flunked out of high school. So tried college for a year and this, that, and the other thing. But I had manic breaks along the way that I write about in the book. And mental illness is part of our family. My grandma was institutionalized for life. And mental illness is such a epidemic in this country and in the world, for that matter, that this message is really supposed to be geared towards addressing that issue. And ever since childhood, Stacy, from 15 on, it just became very dark for me.
We all have those moments in our lives before we're traumatized that life was grand. You know, what were those moments in life that you kind of think about and treasure?
Yeah, we had a middle-class Catholic upbringing, you know. My dad and I liked to fish with my brother, and, you know, that was all well and good. Like I said, up until 12, we would go hunt and play football games together. And, you know, as my only brother, Pat took great care of me. You know, he was a go-getter, and he wrote the dedication in my book and did a great job on that. So he and I remain pretty close. He's, you know, he's not a believer. And if you were to read that dedication at the front of my book, you'd never believe that, because he got into the meat of, you know, the how I grew up and how my wife carried us for 20 years as a family when I could not function in society after I did cycle that one time in a padded cell that was just so traumatic to me. So, yeah, it was a fairly normal upbringing until everything unraveled.
This part of your story is where I think people actually, you know, I think people will be able to kind of understand, you know, what you were silently struggling with. You know, what was the lowest point, the moment that you'll never forget? So what was it actually like to be homeless and to lose that sense of safety and dignity?
It was awful. To sum it all up, I'll give you one short little story about the first homeless shelter. We were so underfunded in the homeless shelter for Easter. We were served a half a banana and a half a cup of milk. So, you know, you talk about hardship, that's hardship 101 right there. So, you know, and then when you go back in my story in about being in a padded cell for 3 straight days, touring hell, seeing what that was like, falling apart, not unable to function in society for 20 plus years after that, unable to hold a job, and, you know, just hardship after hardship after hardship. So it just compounded, and that was what really was a part of the addiction and everything else that was playing the big role in it all. I don't know if anybody else that could cope, having seen that, you know. Thankfully, the one solace was, like I said, I was journaling about it. And I remember what started the journaling process was simply that Oprah had this guy on her show one time about, I think it was the Pieces of Mirror or something, but long story short, it was a false book. And so Oprah invited him back on the following day to chew him out. But that started the writing process, because I remember turning to my wife many years ago when that show aired and said, my story is real and it's so far above and beyond what this guy was talking about, so I'm just going to start writing. And that kind of started the process.
I love that. And in the darkness, were you telling yourself about who you were and whether things could ever change?
Yeah, you know, when I was on a psych unit, there was this gentleman that said, Mike, you remind me so much of Job in the Bible. Because you lost it, and this is right before they put me in my first homeless shelter. He said, you've lost everything, man, and here you are still standing. And one day God's just going to bring it all back to you a millionfold over. So here I am. Now we're looking at getting my story turned into a movie. And, you know, I mean, it's just such a total turnaround and a miracle. Above miracles. I mean, how many former homeless veterans do you know that are still standing? Because look at the shirt right here. It says 22 veterans per day take their own life. I'm a mental health advocate. Yeah. They all commit suicide, 22 a day. So if I can live through all those trials to now have my story turned into a movie, that is just a miracle in and of itself.
Definitely.
And thankfully, that's how I met Robert Craig that's here today.
Now, every redemption story has a moment where something shifts. So I want to hear about yours.
Where it shifted was I just had that dream where it was like God just had this message for me, you know, Mike, care about the muddy pennies. You know, I mean, if you can just focus your attention on who I bring to you, that trust me, trust in me, that the person that you were born to meet today at these small men's groups, because I'm involved in all those every day of the week, that you're going to love on that person and show them the way to Christ. So, yeah.
Oh, what was the turning point for you?
For me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think what turned it around, like I said, was the dream was the big part of it, but also getting in those small men's groups that just... there's so many hurting people that, you know, it's like you can't help but just love on them and just say, you know, I've been there. Now I'm a mentor, you know, and I lead Bible studies. And I'm involved with the church. And I just, my life has just turned a 180 corner because of how God appeared to me in that personal way in that dream many years ago. So that was the real turning point. To sum it all up, is just to focus on God's unconditional love for these hurting people.
Do you think it was like a person or a moment of faith or something inside you that refused to give up that got you through it all?
I think it was a combination of that, and God has a purpose and a plan for everybody, which is really my ultimate message, is no two people are alike, you know. If you look at a set of twins, they might be looking identical, but they got totally different talents. And what I always share in the groups is that I don't want to be the person that hid his talents in the, you know, I want to get out there and share my message and carry it to the many people as possible to not have another veteran die on my watch and other people that aren't veterans die on my watch without hearing my message. And that's really what fuels me every day to continue on to do what I do.
I love that. Now, what started to, you know, pull you back up, and what did you have?
I had to come out of my shell and reach out to these small men's groups and just pour my heart out and say, you know, Mike, share this with somebody else. And if you want to talk about a life turning a point that I haven't mentioned yet is the Seeds of Hope Food Pantry that I'm a full-time fundraiser for. I went out there. I was scheduled to go to this conference to see about getting my story turned into a movie. And I went out there and saw people standing in line 2-3 blocks long waiting for a box of food to have to hold them through the week. So the guy that runs it, my good friend Blair Hill, said, "Mike, I just want you to sit here and watch tonight. Don't do anything else. Just sit and watch." And these hurting people, I tell you what, if you want a turning point in your life, volunteer at a homeless shelter or a food pantry or something like that, that God is calling you to get out there and get relevant in the community and see the hurting people. That's going to put a big change in the way you look at life.
Now, if this, you know, for the listeners out there, if this story is touching something in you and you're walking through your own dark season right now, please stay with us because the next part is about how a person rebuilds. So follow The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi right now. Every week we bring you real stories of resilience, hope, and the strength to keep going. Now, you know, Mike, you didn't just survive, you rebuilt. And I think that's where the hope lives for people listening because they want to rebuild their life. So how did you start putting your life back together piece by piece?
I had to reach out of my shell and say, you know what? Hiding my pain is only causing me to repeat my pain and suffer in silence. So I had to step out into those small groups and say, hey, I'm hurting. You know, for me, it wasn't the church. It was the small groups because those people honestly really love on each other and really are there to have each other's back. So whenever I give my talks, I always say, get involved in those small men's groups.
Right. Now, what kept you going on the days it felt impossible?
If I were to say, honestly, just being able to get out of bed and thank God that I'm still alive to share my message.
Right.
Just being grateful. If you go into the Life Recovery Bible, which I read every day, that's what the message of the Life Recovery Bible is really all about, is God's look at and the restoration process and being in gratitude for every day that you have been given. And we all should work with that mindset each day. Be grateful. Be grateful that you're still alive and that God restored you, brought you back from the brink so that you could bless other people. That's why I'm still.
And looking back now, what do you understand about struggle, about veterans facing these battles, and about who feels, you know, for anyone who feels invincible, that you wish the world would understand?
I believe it's just one-on-one time. I have all my medical appointments at the VA, so I just go up there, you know, for my appointments, but I always make a point to show up early for my appointments so I can have that one-on-one time and share my story with these veterans and listen, more importantly, to their stories. Because it's always not about you having to get your message across to somebody. It's about listening is a big part of it, which is the old saying, you know, that's why we have two ears and one mouth. So
yeah.
You got to listen to their hurts and then share your pain with them and then encourage them.
Right. Now, for your whole heart in sharing this is to help someone else. So let's speak straight to them. For the person listening who feels like they're in the gutter right now, whatever their version of what that is, what do you most want them to know?
I want them to know that God loves them unconditionally. They were born for a purpose. And God does not make mistakes. You know, you were born for a purpose and you've got your hurts, but so does everybody else. So love on each other. Okay. But love yourself first. Get out of your shell.
Mm-hmm.
Reach out to somebody and share your story of pain and say, hey, I'm hurting. What, you know, where can I go to get help? The veterans are just one part of the equation. With their suicide rates, we're in a mental health crisis on the planet. So that's why I really felt just driven to get my message out to so many people. I reached out. I wanted to get it turned into the biggest way to feed the poor that I could after seeing that food pantry. And I thought, okay, God, how can I take this model and blow it up globally? And I thought the only way I know how to do that is get on these podcasts and push it like into a movie. And now I'm on the brink of that. So, you know, you talk about a restoration story, that's it.
And, you know, what would you say to the person who's lost hope that things can never get better?
I would say to them, 988, you can call there. It's a for the suicide hotline. There's a national prayer chain. You can call. The people will pray for you 24/7, 365. If you don't feel comfortable, there's so many outlets to address the mental health crisis these days. Look them up, go online and say, you know what, don't give up. And I always share this in all my podcasts. If you feel like you have nobody else that you can trust, I hand out my business email, my personal email, and say, reach out to Mike, and that'll be in the show notes. I will provide that.
Now, Robert, I'd love to hear briefly about what it was about Mike's story that moved you to want to tell it.
Well, that's interesting that you ask it that way. Because I wasn't looking for a movie to produce, because we already have lots of stories, you know, movies to produce, right? So, but when Mike sent an inquiry through our website, I always take the opportunity and the time to reach back out to whatever that need might be. And, you know, since we just finished, a film on homelessness and a documentary on homelessness, as you can imagine, I get inquiries actually from people that have been experiencing homelessness, and I reach out to them and I encourage them, I pray for them, I help them. And then I also get inquiries from folks like Mike, hey, will you make a movie on my story? And, you know, I always take those seriously to help them, though I'm not looking for something to produce because we already have films. So Mike sends me his inquiry, tells me his whole story on our website. And I'm going, okay, Lord, here's another one. What can I do to help Mike? And so I replied back and I encouraged him, motivated him, and kind of shared a few things. This is your story. You want to make a movie? Here's a few things that you need to do. Obviously, get a screenplay to start. And that actually led into Mike contacting me again, and we hopped on the phone, and, you know, I heard more about his story. I spent probably 15 to 20 minutes and really kind of gave him A to Z. Okay, if you really want to make a movie, this is what you need to do. I'm just want to help him, because I think that's important to do for people, even though my goal wasn't to get anything out of it other than to help him. And then Mike said, Rob, you really got to read the book. And I'm going, okay, now I got to read a book. Do I have time to read a book? You know, but I want to be faithful. I want to be true. So I said, okay, Mike, I'm going to read the book and let's see where that goes. Right. And I'm figuring I'll read it. Maybe I've got more tips I could give him. But I have to tell you, I got to chapter 5 in his book. And I wasn't looking to produce a movie on his story, but I was like shocked and I was sold. And I'm going, I couldn't believe the feeling that I was having. It's like, oh my gosh, I actually want to make a movie on this guy, because I love his story. I couldn't wait to finish it. So I read the book, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
And it has some elements in there that I quite frankly haven't seen done today in Hollywood. And I really want to bring that to the screen. You know, Mike has shared his life of mental illness, trying to commit suicide, going to jail, looking for the Lord. God found him. He eventually turned his life over to Jesus Christ. So, I mean, we've heard lots of those things, but what we haven't really heard is on the big screen is the voices that he heard.
Yeah.
When he was in that padded cell for 3 days, you know, those voices were coming from demons. And he thought that he was actually the Antichrist. I love dogs, you know, and his book is in several places. He talks about where he's hearing these voices. And I've had conversations with Mike and he agrees they're coming from satanic forces because it's spiritual warfare of what's going on. And for me as a producer, from a creative standpoint, I want that to be seen. Right. I want part of his movie to show, actually a main part of the theme of this movie is that those voices that he's hearing that's causing him to do things that he shouldn't do are coming and stemming from, you know, the evil side. And of course, his book also talks about people that have come up to him and said, hey, you know, God said, I need to come up to you and pray for you. And then Mike said, yeah, sure, go ahead and pray for him. But that part of the story is where there's angels, you know, and the Holy Spirit talking with people. Again, the spiritual forces of good and evil that we don't see, and woven through this to bring about a story that, so when people watch this at the theater and they come out of the theater, right, and they're walking down the street and they see an ATM machine, they see a guy next to the ATM machine pull his wallet out, puts the ATM card in, takes some money out, puts his wallet in the back pocket, and it falls out of his pocket, but he doesn't know, and he continued walking down the street. But you just watch the movie and you see this guy and his wallet folded on the ground. What do? And it's like, right, you get a thought, oh, maybe I'll just take the wallet because no one's going to know. Right. You know, that's an evil thought, right? Mm-hmm. Where did that thought come from? Was right. there a demon that tempted him right next to him, telling him, you need to go take that wallet? But we don't see it. It's invisible, but it's spiritual warfare and it's there. And then the other side of it is the angels on this side saying, no, you need to go grab that wallet, run down to that guy and tell him he dropped his wallet to give it back to him. Therefore, the person that the good and evil were just speaking to him, he needs to struggle and decide what's the right thing to do. And these are the kind of components he will want to bring about in the movie, as well as his the dream that he had, the vision from God. That's like a really amazing. In his life, going up and down with the Lord, as God was pursuing him, and at the end, of course, good wins over evil.
Right.
And now Mike is doing really great things with his life, and I think that needs to be captured and thrown on the big screen.
I agree. And you know, Mike, you know, one question: you lived something most people couldn't even survive, and you turned it into a message of hope. So, from that gutter to where you stand today, what do you most want people to understand about redemption, the second chances, and about strength at, you know, that's inside of them, even when they can't even feel it?
Well, Stacy, I've had that question asked to me a lot of times, and if I had to sum it all up, I would say, you know, when Jesus poured out his blood on the cross, he did that for the entire world. That was the plan of salvation that he put on everybody's heart, you know. And if he can go to the cross and bear all that pain and suffering, that's far more than what Mike Smith went through in his life. And I would point them to the cross and say, you know what? You were born for a purpose, my friend. God loves you unconditionally. And if you're struggling, it's like I shared with you a few moments ago, Stacy, that maybe they can't relate to anybody. Mm-hmm. So that's why I always say, reach out to me, just like Robert, God bless him. I reached out to every producer possible. And I told Robert that, and he got a laugh out of that, saying, you know, well, how many producers rejected you? And I said, every one. So, you know, that's what makes him stand out, and God bless him for that. So my point being is that there's hope and help, and if you can't find it through any other outlet, I will talk to you personally. I will set aside time, like Robert, to pray for you, to encourage you. I don't care how many I get. That's one of the first things I do every morning is answer those emails.
Right.
If they don't want to leave me their phone call, their phone number, please just give me an email at mike@theguttergospel.com and I will reply.
I love and it.
I would just say that. That is pouring out my heart towards every hurting penny, muddy penny on the planet. So reach out to me personally.
And where can people find your book? And that you could tell everybody what your title of the book is.
Yeah, the title of the book is The Gutter Gospel. And then the subtitle is The Road to Redemption. And I really believe that the road to redemption is, it might not be a perfect road to redemption because it's a journey. But if you reach out to the book and start reading on it, there's sample chapters at theguttergospel.com. You can start there. And then I would encourage you to pick up a copy of the book if for no other reason. It's what the screenplay is based on. So, you know, that would speak volumes to people to get it. And I would really encourage that. And like I said, reach out to me in any way that you feel necessary. I have my YouTube channel set up. You can go on there and watch similar podcasts I've done where that message is right down the line, the very same message. I always hand that out to people. So I would encourage them to pick up a copy of the book and to also reach out to me personally if they have no.
I love that. I love that. And is there any way that we can keep track and kind of follow you so we can find out what's going on with the movie and when the film is expected to come out?
Anytime you want to invite me back on your show, I'd love to come back and gab.
I'd love that.
Yeah, and I'll share the updates. Robert shared some good updates with me this morning. We don't have time to get into them now, but it's in the process of really becoming something spectacular. I hope not that I'm not sounding like a used car salesman, but you know, it's in development, it's in its early stages, and God's got his hand on it, and I just am so thrilled in life right now. I could not be happier, so I'm willing to spend as much one-on-one time with the person that does reach out to me, so please feel free. I'm retired now from the military with my disability, so I have nothing but time on my hands to talk.
Love it. And is there anything you'd like to add, Robert, before we go?
So as far as about getting updates about the movie, to respond to your question, I know Mike was answering it. We will be giving updates. I don't know when we're going to start our first announcement, but probably in a few weeks. People can go to robertcraigfilms.com and just sign up for our newsletter. And we don't bombard people with newsletters, but we'll be giving some updates shortly about that film. And once we start, we'll be giving regular updates about it.
Oh, I love it. Wonderful. And for the listeners out there, you know, it turns out that our lowest moments don't have to be the end of our story. Sometimes they're just the beginning of the most important chapter, the comeback. Now, Mike Smith has lived through the unimaginable and came back with a message that he could be a lifeline for someone else listening right now. And in a beautiful testament to the power of his story, it's even being made into a film. But more than that, more than anything, Mike reminded us today that no matter how far down you are, there is always a way back up. Mike, thank you so much for being here and for your courage in sharing this. And Robert, thank you so much for taking the time to share and tell us about the film and also for your big heart, you know, and being able to take time of your own to bring this story to the surface so others can learn from it, they can grow from it, and hopefully they can change their own lives from what they learned from this movie and live the life that they were meant to live. So thank you both.
God bless.
Thank you, Stacey.
You're very welcome. Both of you have a wonderful day.
You too.
You too.
Bye-bye.